Hi, and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. Panel, we're going to talk about the story on the front page of Business Day, Visa to loosen his grip on ShopRite. I have only the vaguest of grips on what the story implies. I'm sure it isn't on the front page of Business Day for nothing. But Christo Visa owns ShopRite, which we know owns Checkers. How, Sekonati?
So the ShopRite comes from the pyramids of old in South Africa on the JSE, where if Peter Bruce starts a company but needs to raise capital, so you will then need other people to pitch in money. You don't have all the money you need, but you need to ensure protection vests in you. So you'll
control.
Thank you, Ron. Control vests with you. Yeah. So you will. There will be a class of shares that is that is high voting and only accessible to a certain number of people.
And people actually people pay for the non-voting shares.
People pay for low-voting shares.
Because they are idiots, or there's
because they back the entrepreneur. It's like a backing.
So they're backing you.
In his case, they're
backing. They'd have been backing
Visa.
Visa. They believe you are so good.
Or Whitey Basson. Was it Whitey Basson or Visa?
Whitey was the jockey. Yeah. Visa was the chairman.
Okay.
And Whitey managed the company and grew the wealth of those investors exponentially. Yeah. But the pyramid control gave Christo Visa 32% voting interest. Yeah. These are not shares. Yeah. And then he owned, like every other shareholder now, he owned 16%. So he with 16% of the shares, he controlled 48% of the company.
Is there a price to that sort of control, though? Why would he be loosening it? Why would he be now not wanting as much control? Ron, what's it?
I mean, I think it's where the company itself is trying to distance itself from Christo Visa.
So this is not Visa to lose.
This is ShopRite, the new ShopRite, right?
Okay.
So I think Visa is in a precarious position right now where, I mean, the house are out for him and anything, and all the debts amounting to the stand-up story. So it's like ShopRite, the company itself, now in a position where they can buy out that voting control, but it's also an issue of Visa losing credibility.
Look, those pyramids still exist in this country. Yeah. I mean, Naspers is run as a pyramid, right? Koos Becker owns
and his management still.
The real shares. Everyone else owns N shares, I think they call. Mm-hmm.
But that's being challenged still, right? Like internationally,
I was going to say. I think this is more like the broader, bigger picture here is really about governance.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a bit of a backlash against these sort of structures because they always basically lives there in the minority.
Who is backlashing?
No, I mean, there's been, as you mentioned, the controversies around Naspers always comes up in every AGM, especially the smaller shareholders, because smaller shareholders that feel they get disadvantaged because basically like their share is not worth the same as the other person.
In the case of ShopRite, there are several things to consider. The first being Christo Visa's age himself. He's 77 years old, and of the company's the King Codes recommend a director at 70 should retire.
Oh, really?
He's 77 years old, and with all the ructions at Steinhoff and his sons being negatively affected there, or the stigmas of Steinhoff which stuck to Christo, means he does not exactly have someone to take over ShopRite after him. So this does then allow him to actually ease out. But at the same time, as Ron pointed out, there's the issue of credibility. Everything associated with Christo Visa at this point is quite problematic in the light of Steinhoff.
Because at one stage, if I remember correctly, he was trying to merge ShopRite and Steinhoff. Mm.
That is why,
and that came very. That actually came very close to happening.
That was his big. I mean, his big goal in life.
Right.
At some point, when he realized keeping money offshore is the future for his investment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Frankfurt thing. And remember,
he was famously found with a bag full of 600,000 pounds.
Exactly. It almost tells you his thinking. So that was all. So taking Steinhoff into Frankfurt, and Steinhoff eventually tying up with ShopRite, that will be Visa's golden goose.
Okay, so it didn't happen. The dream is shattered. And
which saved him?
Yeah, imagine.
Which probably said. Well, it also cost him. I mean, how much did he lose on Steinhoff? 30, 40 billion rand?
50 billion.
50 billion rand.
Maybe it didn't save him. Can you imagine? Look, this is the thing. If that happened, there would have been so much smoke and mirrors that no one would have known what what empty vessel Steinhoff is, because all of the combining with ShopRite, it would kick the can down the road to a later date.
Maybe Luke, does he then just become, through this process, an ordinary but pretty powerful shareholder in Steinhoff, into which now other people can...
In ShopRite.
And ShopRite, into which other people can now make a play for it, try and take it over.
And that is the main thing for minority shareholders. Yeah. Investors should be able to come in. The company should always be subject to a takeover, which keeps management on their toes.
And also, it will help the company re-rate its share price, right? Imagine now, if you want to buy shares in ShopRite and you think it's controlled by Visa, that same guy who did that. So now with him not controlling, I think the share will
become more attractive,
for people to buy.
But isn't it interesting the way when South African companies go abroad? And it's not limited to them, you know. I remember when I used to work for the FT in London, the same thing would happen to the Brits. They'd make big investments abroad, you know, in Australia or America, and they would crash. Yeah. It wouldn't work. Yeah. I mean, I read a story today saying, was it Wilson Bailey Holmes had lost a fortune building a road in between Sydney and Melbourne or something like that. I see the cover of the next FM, or this week's FM, Ian Moore is the CEO of Woolworths, and the FM cover is saying Ian Moore's 21.4 billion lemon. Can Woolworths survive Australia? So they've gone and bought all sorts of things in Australia. Mm. Davy Jones I was going to say David Jones, David Jones Locker, Country Road, and all those sort of things. Are they failing too? Are they battling?
Yeah.
Why can't we do it? Why can't we own businesses in other countries?
I think, there's some success stories, but very few, right? But when Woolworths goes to Australia and our companies go abroad, it's the panic syndrome with South Africans, right?
They're just trying to get capital out the country.
Yeah, and they're panicking about the country's economic prospects and there's a downturn. Woolworths was a great company up until before they went to Australia. Mm. It was doing very well, but there would be a cyclical downturn.
I mean, if you look at...
That panic, throw all that money into Australia,
there was no
and then
panic,
you get burned.
I suppose it was a form of panic, but if you go back to the 90s, there were those big five companies that left, right? There was Anglo-American went, Old Mutual went, SA Breweries went. Who else went? Dimension Data went.
Dimension Data.
Some of them don't even exist anymore.
Yeah. Only one has...
Mutual came back.
Yeah, Mutual.
But did it come back with its tail between its legs?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, really? Yes, definitely. Got burned.
If you look at it, it doesn't add value for shareholders. It might have added value for the executives.
They got to live in London and send their kids
to private schools.
I'm sure that's right.
But I'm not sure whether...
The only one was S.B. Miller, who you could say, but S.B. Miller was so...
They did very well. Those executives did very well.
And the company, but S.B. Miller's smartness of it, they focused on Africa, on emerging market, even though they were in London-based, but they were an emerging market brewer. So they weren't trying to dominate the U.S.
Yeah.
They got a Miller, but emerging markets was their game plan. Yeah. Yeah. Old Mutual wanted to become a British insurer. Yeah. Come on.
Anglo is a shadow of its former self. Yeah. About to be taken over by an Indian gajillionaire. Yeah.
There is Investec, I suppose. I mean, that's been a success in fairness. I mean, they built an asset manager there.
One keeps hearing little stories, but nobody ever makes a song and dance about it. Mm. Discovery does some nice business overseas as well. It's done very well in Ireland, of all places. I believe it does well in China.
The one thing that Discovery does out of Old Mutual and...
It seems not to take over things.
Yeah, one, not taking over. Yeah. And they actually have a unique selling proposition with their vitality.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Almost slots them in there where no one is. Yeah. Whereas Old Mutual went to sell insurance to the Europeans and know insurance very well, right? The other guys are going... So it depends on what you're actually selling then. Do you have a competitive offering?
Old Mutual, remember, they expanded into the US right at the wrong time, just before the subprime crisis. So that was not like the
Let's bring it back
hindsight home. Is a perfect science, of course, but
let's bring it back home where ShopRite has had success, a lot of them.
Yeah.
It was on the African continent.
Yeah.
The company now employs about 150,000 people in Africa.
Including
South Africa. Because they didn't do exactly what you guys are discussing
acquisitions.
They didn't go to other continents and they did not acquire anything. They just grew organically throughout the continent, and that has been their success. Woolworths went into Nigeria and came back without success. They lost a lot of money, and as did mining companies. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Then they went to Australia thinking they will make it, and then they have lost even more money. So ShopRite Christo Wiese and the team combination of YT Person did fantastic work and really enriched the investors in that company.
Yeah.
Something that no other retailer has done.
By the time Steinhoff collapsed, was ShopRite in any way connected to it other than Visa?
No, they only shared the major shareholder and chairman.
Yeah.
That's all. They were separate entities. And the deal, the deal Steinhoff, Marcus Uster, and Visa were trying to stitch together was to bring them together. And YT Person said, I don't think so. He had been chief executive of ShopRite.
He stood up to it.
YT and Uster have never been on one page, ever. So
YT and Uster. People talk about the Stellenbosch Mafia. Yeah. There's no Stellenbosch. They all know each other, right?
YT and Uster have always been on opposite planes, and he never quite got why Visa is in love with this character called Uster. And he always kind of talked Visa against him, but Fanny Visa or Whitey was very happy when this
a billion or two thing. Or 2 billion to leave ShopRite.
Is he left now?
Yeah, Whitey retired last year after was it 28 years as chief executive. He's the guy that actually grew ShopRite for Christo Wiese and Uster was on the other side growing Steinhoff.
What happened? What was Steinhoff Africa?
That's the Pepco.
That's Pepco.
That is a gem of a company. Unfortunately, like that whole Steinhoff part of it just like really muddied it. But Pep's an awesome company.
But that remains and that's okay and that's good. That's a real cash business.
Out of everything,
It's not full of related parties and all of these.
Almost at its core, Steinhoff. Pep is the one thing out of all that rubbish that's there that's solid business. Cash flow is cash only and a proper footprint. And that almost made sense to me when they were doing the ShopRite Steinhoff thing. The only thing that actually made sense was Pep and ShopRite as a merge. The rest was just hot noise. Right?
And would they ever merge?
In the future, play. One never knows. But I think Pep and ShopRite because they're all in the same malls. They're next to each other in every of these every mall across the country, rural area. There'll be a ShopRite right next to Pep. So there is some semblance of synergies you can.
And in the smallest
pull out
of towns,
would they be allowed?
This is the unique thing. In the smallest of towns, like my hometown of Ngqeleni, you will find a Pep there. You may not find anything else, but you will find a Pep.
Fading blue sun.
Exactly. Now, will they be allowed, with Christo Wiese not being the dominant shareholder, the whole thing is open.
Yeah.
It's open to any
play. But Pepco was the business that Visa first got into, wasn't it, initially?
That's his claim.
It started up in Kimberley or somewhere near Kimberley.
His dad gave him the initial investment. The whole family.
Somebody else started it. Bargain Basement Clothes.
Christo bought it when it was only 4 stores in the Northern Cape, in Carnarvon, Kimberley.
I like the story about his dad giving everything. Everything into Christo to buy the thing, and almost collapse the family. That thing went down.
These stories are extraordinary. They're extraordinary stories.
They are.
Modern Africana capitalism, Anton Rupert. I think they're amazing. Stay with us. We've got lots to talk about. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back. I know that Jabu Mabuza was giving evidence earlier on at the Zondo Commission this week in this very building about Eskom and the machinations, Sikonati, of one of your favorite people, Mr. Koko. How powerful was his statement to the commission? How damaging was it to the looters?
So Jabu Mabuza basically came in and told Judge Zondo what Eskom did when Jabu Mabuza got appointed together with the new board in January 2018. What they did, they suspended people like Machela Koko. Anuj Singh had already been suspended and he immediately resigned. So they went on a forensic investigation, took the machines that these people who had been implicated in corruption had used. And Mabuza used these words through a court process. they did a, conducted a forensic investigation which uncovered collusion with of Eskom executives with the Gupta company's regime.
So this is Koko had actually been corresponding with them and sending them Eskom documentation, right?
Mabuza specifically said when Machela Koko was returned to Eskom after that 4-month suspension with the four executives, that very day he started sending emails with confidential and classified information to Salim Essa, who was working with Regiments Capital and McKinsey. Yeah. But Ben Ngubane was doing the same. Suzanne Daniels, who was head of the legal department, was doing the same. Anuj Singh was doing the same. They were all basically...
What would have been in these documents?
And he said some of the board resolutions were drafted by Salim Essa and Trillian and then sent into Eskom to be put on the letterhead and rubber stamped and voted on and accepted.
But that implies that they were in fact fraudulent, the resolutions.
You could say they were in the sense that someone who's got nothing to do with the company drafts a resolution, a round robin resolution for the company that exposes Eskom to 1.87 billion rand.
Is there enough in what he was saying for there to be a prima facie case against some of these people?
What Mabuza was saying was what this newspaper Business Day and the Financial Mail, for the past 3 years, we really worked on those. We had access to these documents. Yeah. And then the Gupta emails came and the whole media had access to it. And those emails have now been accepted as evidence before the commission. Yeah. What he was doing then was adding to those, more information indeed, and confirming what we had been writing over the past three,
Does
4 years.
Does it matter necessarily if you, and I help me on a point of law, I mean, so anybody who's implicated in this, people's testimony has the right to come and give evidence to the commission. Does it matter, Ron, whether they, in order for charges now to be drawn up against them, does it matter whether they've given evidence to the commission or not? I mean, they are liable to
You're liable at the end of the recommendation will come and the
security agencies or the legal agencies like the NPA can act whether you've given testimony or not.
Whether you've not. So at the end of the recommendation from Zondo.
So what you want from Cyril Ramaphosa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, is you want the proclamation forming the investigative directorate at the NPA, and they can start doing this stuff really quickly. It would take, I mean,
this
judging from
2 years.
From the little I heard Jabu Mabuza say, it would take about half an hour to draw up a vague, you know, a reasonably solid charge against
someone. The one thing we need to be careful of is to separate the court process where charges will be preferred in court in a criminal matter.
Yeah.
Versus the commission.
Of course.
So this will give recommendations and say, these are the findings.
Yeah.
This guy is guilty of XYZ. Charge him.
Move forward, yeah.
Again, with evidence that has been available to the media for 4 years.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, this is the thing. For 4 years, we have heard this, we've been writing about it, telling the story that is now being confirmed under oath.
Yeah.
And nothing has happened. The commission will give a recommendation and say, charge that guy.
Independently of the commission, Shamila Batohi, who is the new head of the NPA, could, in theory, or even in practice, once she has, even now, she could. There is nothing preventing her from going ahead and charging anybody.
Not at all.
No.
Agritsi, right? He was part of this commission.
But there were previous charges already prepared in that. So somebody's, it's typing, right? I mean, somebody's got to actually type, do the letters and type the charges,
apparently,
and then they've got to go.
There's a shortage of typists,
there's
too.
A shortage in a of typists in the NPA.
37% unemployment rate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, look, but I mean, it's been fascinating. We now wait for the NPA to start behaving like we all expect it to.
Peter, you know, the key thing...
She understands, and she said when she was appointed, that she understood how frustrated the South African public were, how desperate we were for some justice to come out of her office, and that she was going to give it to us. You know, and now we wait. It's 1 month and counting.
The key thing we did not mention about the Eskom testimony. So the commission will deal with Eskom for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Today, as we recorded the show, the chief executive, former chief executive of Optimum Coal, who worked for Glencore, was testifying before Jabu, before the Zondo Commission.
Yeah.
It is here that we will now get to know exactly what happened in that meeting Museveni Zizwane held in Zurich.
In Zurich.
Yes.
Yeah.
We will be told.
The one that he never went on.
The one that he never went on. And
the trip he never took.
And ended up in India in a Gupta jet.
Via Dubai.
Via Dubai.
Yeah. The only reason to go to Dubai, obviously, is to do what? I mean, we all know. It takes half an hour or an hour or a day to open a bank account and then you're gone.
Even like that whole thing when what was Phil Mbalula went there for a holiday, a family holiday. I'm like, 700,000. Why, out of all places on planet Earth, take your kids to Dubai for a holiday?
To a desert.
To a 700,000 rand, like, come
on. A hot desert.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible, terrible, terrible stuff. Mm. Listen, what did you think of Tito Mboweni? I mean, I wasn't here for the live budget discussion last Wednesday, but he comes out of it quite well, don't you think?
I think it did. I mean, the presentation was good. I think, like you got, as I was mentioned, you got a special mention yourself in the
press conference. Not in the budget speech, but in the briefing, right?
In the briefing, yes, yes.
Then,
it's always been talk about him since he came in. In fact, he himself allowed this talk to be that he's not really interested in the job, that Cyril forced him into it, and then he's not going to stay. But also they thought the sense, even with the previous, like in the medium term, wasn't really his, and why were there were questions whether or not he actually had any input in this one. But it gave the impression of somebody who actually did.
Okay.
And who actually was actually quite passionate
about what he said. And I love the way he talked about state-owned companies, and it was very casual. Maybe that was a charming veneer to hide the awful truth below it, which is that our fiscal position is now worse than it was.
Oh yeah, the numbers were definitely depressing. But I mean, the way he was so forthright about what was wrong, what needed to be fixed, was actually quite refreshing. And then he also left the place feeling a bit like sort of optimistic.
Do we think just to come back to the bit where he mentions me in the briefing, it's because I'd written the column based on a column Carol Payton had written, was that he didn't look interested in his job. And so I called a lot of people after I read Carol's thing, and they said, he doesn't seem all that interested.
Yeah.
And in fact, he told a room full of people at one of the colloquiums that he had at Gibbs, that he wasn't coming back after the election. Yeah. So then in the briefing, he says, the first part of this budget is for is for Peter Bruce.
My solemn vow.
Took a solemn vow in the Constitution, all that. Mm. And then, all that. But then he fails to pitch up at the Nedbank dinner. Which finance ministers always attend and are always the main speaker at.
At least he didn't pitch up at the New Age dinner on the budget.
Let me give him, maybe I can defend him here. I don't know why he didn't pitch up because there was never any statement. But I was at the briefing listening to him. You could tell that he had a bit of a cold. So maybe he just wasn't up to it.
Come on. This guy for 10 years has not had a proper job, right?
Mm.
After the isolation from the Zuma thing. This guy has got used to a particular way of living where no one tells him what to do. Where there's no PA like, Minister, be here. So he's not.
I would have advised a change of shirt if I was.
Yeah,
exactly. If I was beneath here.
Yeah, but he's he needs to. No, he needs to almost get more engaged with Treasury. One thing about Treasury, it's a great team, but he needs to get Treasury on board with him and move forward. He's great.
He's perfectly capable of doing it.
Exactly. He's awesome.
Guy, yeah.
I mean, even during the speech, he was comfortable with the issues.
He has to deal with. Look, he's got to be able to take some criticism.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a joke.
Yes.
You know? I remember we on Business Day years ago, he was announcing an interest rate increase or something like that, and he took out his handkerchief and he was mopping his brow like that. So, of course, it was the picture that we had to use in the paper, and we went really so tight in on the thing, and there was this big headline, Tito sweats, or whatever it might be. And he banned photographers from his press conferences after that. You couldn't take a picture of it.
I enjoy that.
We kept using the same picture, which was the result. I mean, there were no new ones.
Yeah.
But will he stay?
I asked him. I was at the briefing. I was at the close-up in Pretoria. I asked him directly, "Are you available after the election? Don't tell me about the presidential prerogative." He said, yes, David Mabuza asked me, and I promised him that if the ANC wins the election, I shall stay.
Yeah.
But they've got to win the election. He said, I'm available to serve if the ANC wins the election.
Okay.
There's real ANC Gauteng really talks about Maria Ramos and that that Ramaphosa is willing to surprise everyone and go against even maybe what's good for him in Luthuli House and put Maria somewhere. And
well, I mean, potentially she does float around there as a possibility. Barbara Creasy would also be viable.
You know, I'm almost for maybe this is aesthetically, right? Ramaphosa, Mboweni, I just imagine him when he was governor, that was him engaged and him on top of things.
He loved it.
And I have not seen that type of, I've got this under check, I'm running this institution. Yeah. So that hasn't returned. I haven't got that feeling that
I don't think, well, running the central bank and being in government must be two completely different
things. Maybe he should shave his head as well. I like the bald look, I don't know.
Yeah, I know, there was too much hair, too much blue in the suit. And the, check shirt with a curly collar.
He's definitely not coming into this show after what you've just said. I can't see him accepting an invite if we were to offer one.
Are we getting anywhere with the PRC? Do we know any more about IO and why they were given all this amount of money to produce a company which is worth a fraction of what the PRC lent it?
Yes, you are loving the IO story.
We don't know much at this point other than that the companies and CIPC, the old Cipro, has actually compelled the PIC to recover the 4.3 billion rand it invested.
But how do they do that? I mean, so there was a headline there, PIC directors told to recover, but it's gone.
It's not gone necessarily. It's been invested in something. There's still, the company is worth about 6 billion rand now on the JSE. Oh. But the portion of the PIC is half 30%. What it had invested. Okay. It's about 30% of what it had invested. So they can still recover the money.
Does IO make anything?
Don't ask that question when the good doctor is watching.
IO's whole purpose is 30% in BT, British Telecoms, Astega.
Oh,
and they didn't get that. Outside of that...
That's an old relationship. That's an old survey relationship.
So outside of that, I don't know what IO is. They don't know what IO is. No one really knows. But PIC says we only invested because of 30%. They didn't get 30%.
And they didn't get it. And then the PIC allegedly flouted a lot of its processes, which is why the commission...
In order to give this loan. Okay. That's it for today. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll see you again next week.